Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to your unclogged supply chain of media criticism. It's the Newsbusters podcast. One of our favorite products, our most popular products, is Curtis Houck churning and burning through the Jen Psaki show, the White House press briefing. One of the hot clips yesterday was when New York Times reporter Michael Shear asked about the ongoing supply chain crisis, and Psaki tried to dismiss it all by talking about the tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed. Oh, that's what we're going to do now? We're going to make fun of consumers for having their products delayed? Ben Shapiro tweeted, play this on a loop in 2022. Well, but this is sort of the problem, is when Jen Psaki becomes Jen Snarky, where do you find it? I mean, now you can find it because Curtis will put it on Twitter, but Curtis has trouble finding this on television. You know, we're hunting through streaming services, trying to find where you can actually find a recording of the White House briefing. So then there's the question, when it's over, what clips actually make it to the newscasts, which is even more perilous, you know? So conservative tweeters will share it, but most of America doesn't see it. Our top subject today is Politico's West Wing watchers are monitoring Biden and his granting out of interviews. They are very rare. They wrote, President Joe Biden is not doing one-on-one interviews. In the first 9 months of his presidency, he's participated in just 10, none since Labor Day. At this point in their presidencies, Barack Obama had participated in 131 interviews, more than 13 times as many as Biden. Donald Trump had participated in 57, 16 of which were within the friendly confines of Fox News, says Politico. Well, how many of Obama's 131 interviews were within the friendly confines of the liberal media, Politico? How many of those were Fox News interviews, Politico, for Obama? I would guess zero. Maybe Obama submitted to Chris Wallace in Fox News Sunday once, but I kind of doubt it. These numbers come from former CBS White House reporter Mark Noller. He keeps a tally. And here's another interesting tidbit. Biden's presidential interview tally of 10 is well off his pace as Vice President Biden. As of October 2009, Biden had done at least double the number of interviews he's done as president and would often do all three network morning shows on the same day. This would be because, at that point, the decision makers were the Obama communications team. They wanted to send Biden out probably to be the attack dog. And at that point, maybe they just thought, if he messes up, everybody will just say, isn't that cute, Uncle Joe? He's so plain spoken. Now, I mean, I think that they really suggest they're scared to put him out there. Politico adds that Biden has been especially wary of talking to print publications. He has yet to do an interview with reporters from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Associated Press, or Reuters. Now, this is where Donald Trump got zero credit. Donald Trump would sit down with print reporters. Donald Trump sat down with reporters who were incredibly hostile to him, reporters who were writing entire books attacking him. And he got zero credit from that. You had Brian Stelter running around with his dress over his head about how democracy was dying in darkness, the Washington Post, democracy's dying in darkness, and he's granting interviews to the Washington Post. He's granting interviews to CNN. And he gets zero credit because he attacks the media and he gave access to the media. But apparently he gets no credit for the access because, well, that's just Trump engaging in his ego or something. But Biden can sit here and do next to nothing, and that's okay. Politico might notice it, you know, just sort of whisper it to you. Have you noticed this trend? But it's not like people are upset or uptight or screaming about this. People are not upset because this is the way the liberal media operate. You can avoid them, you can ignore them, you can try to talk around them. And they're fine with that because we're all Democrats. We all have the same political objectives. If that's the way the sake shop wants it to run, well, I guess we'll just roll with it. Biden has done 3 print interviews with the president. One with one of his favorite columnists, David Brooks of the New York Times. Blech. One with Edward Isaac Dovere of The Atlantic for his book about the 2020 campaign. This was excerpted on May 25. The interview was just after the inauguration, so it almost barely counts as a presidential interview. But let's remind you, who is Edward Isaac Dovere? The Atlantic ran this sleazy story about how Trump somehow disparaged dead soldiers as losers. That was the Atlantic scoop. And right when that came out, Biden had a press conference. And the first reporter he called on was Edward Isaac Dovere, who asked Biden about how, what kind of dark soul does Donald Trump have? That's who Biden grants interviews to. And of course, the third interview was a joint interview with First Lady Jill Biden for People magazine. Yeah, those hard hitters. Sandra Sobirai Westfall, she used to be a reporter for the Associated Press, but she is a softball specialist for People magazine. This was the cover copy of People magazine, just to remind you. Faith, family, and finding strength together. The president and first lady on surviving tragedy, keeping romance alive after 43 years, and starting the nation's new chapter. This was in February. Inside the magazine, the interview began with a splashy photo of Joe and Jill next to the words in capital letters, "We share each other's dreams." All right, so you're getting the flavor of this? After a breakneck first 7 days, the president and first lady get real about their joy, surviving heartbreak, and their resolve to give the nation a fresh start. In one pull quote in the magazine, Biden said, "Other people mediate for me. Prayer centers me." Yeah. Tough interviews. Wow, we're really holding Biden accountable. All the tough questions. Now, we know why Biden's not doing interviews. It's just easier to have less scrutiny. It's just less hassle. There's less fact-checking. The less he says, the better. It's just amazing that everybody's fine with it, except that they're all liberals. Now, we're looking forward to CNN's so-called town hall, their Potemkin Village of Democracy. Biden will take pre-screened questions from pre-screened audience members and mild-mannered moderator Anderson Cooper. This is better than nothing, maybe not much better. The last time they had one of these with Don Lemon, 8 questioners were identified as Democrats or supporters of the president. 3 were identified as Republicans, but again, the Republicans carefully screened. Questions were read and altered to be helpful to the audience or to the president. And even when one of these restaurateurs asked a very mild question about what are you doing to encourage hiring in our industry, in the restaurant industry, Biden got snippy with him about how you guys don't pay enough money to your help. You can't even handle the softballs without getting snippy. So at least, look, we'll get a Daniel Dale fact check of the things that Biden says. Daniel Dale doesn't really fact check Biden very much, but when he's actually airing live on CNN, well, gosh, maybe they're just going to be shamed into, well, we'll fact check this. What we won't see is one of these articles like from Chris Cillizza. You know, last summer, Donald Trump had a town hall on Fox. And the headline from Chris Cillizza, the 45 most shocking lines from Donald Trump's Lincoln Memorial Fox town hall. And the liberals were all upset that he had a town hall at the Lincoln Memorial, that that was somehow a partisan abuse of our national monuments. And then, of course, Lester Holt and NBC did it, and then it was okay. Fascinating. Speaking of promotional Biden interviews, Dr. Jill Biden, this is what they call her. This is when you know the propaganda is in motion. She's not a medical doctor, but she loves to be called doctor because she hates to be called Mrs. Biden. This is perhaps too much part of the gender binary. Somehow being a wife is insulting. So she's Dr. Biden. So there's an interview at the White House with CBS reporter? I don't know if I'd use that. CBS operative and Democrat donor Gail King, hired because she was a friend of Oprah. Our Scott Whitlock has repeatedly noticed Gail's donations, not just to candidates like Obama, but her donations at the office, her interviews with Barack, her interviews with Michelle, and now we're just extending that whole cycle of syrupy, sugary junk to Dr. Jill Biden. These are the actual questions, all right? I won't bore you with this too much. Some of the questions were to these other teachers. They had four Teacher of the Year people in there in the room, two winners of Teacher of the Year in 2020 and 2021, and then the runners up. And so some of the questions were to the teachers, but they were questions like, you know, how have you handled teaching during COVID, which is a natural question, I guess. But these are the softballs that Gail King offered to Dr. Jill Biden.
What do you think it will take to get teachers the pay that they deserve? You certainly have his ear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what is your message to him? Dr. Biden, what has frustrated you during this time, during this pandemic? Do you ever come home and you say, you know, it was a really tough day, dear, honey, what do you call him? You
don't call him
Joe. Okay, Joe.
Yeah,
it's very difficult. It's very difficult. Well, you could call him Joe.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. It would be very helpful if you would fill in the blank.
Woo! Hardballs. It was a nice, giggly discussion. And they all talked about how much they love the children. Children are the best humans. And they love teaching, and aren't they the greatest? And Tony DeCoppel said teaching is the Lord's work, which is one of those rare times where CBS would use a phrase like the Lord's work. But, you know, they all were like, oh, this was a very interesting conversation. This was a very canned conversation where Jill Biden got to talk about all the things that Joey's bringing you all these millions of dollars through the American Rescue Plan. Pure talking points. It was a very interesting conversation of propaganda. Now, this is one of the things we should mention, that if you really looked at coverage of President Biden compared to President Trump, one of the things the networks really didn't want to do, probably because the Democrats whispering in their ears, were like, don't normalize him. Any White House event, any White House celebration was not considered a newsmaker event, even if the president's there. Gosh, he's a newsmaker. Or the first lady had an event. They didn't really want to cover those events because that would make them some sort of stooges or stenographers to power. So let's remind you, the media is always willing to be stenographers to power when the people they like are in office. And when Trump has an event, the only way that they were interested in a Trump White House event is if they could mock it, if they think Trump said something stupid, or if they think Trump did something outre, like, oh, he had all these athletes in, and the meal they served them was all fast food burgers and chicken nuggets. Okay. I think the people who attended that were perfectly fine with the food, but that was the level of coverage that Trump got. There was a lot of news that wasn't really news. It was our carping about how we don't like this guy and what an oaf he is, and he's stupid, and he's a liar, and he's a dictator, and blah, 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 blah. What he actually does at the White House that might make him look like an actual human being, we're not interested. Our Joseph Vasquez has doggedly followed the liberal activism of James Murdoch and his wife, Catherine. James, you could call, was the child of Rupert that's gone off the reservation. He's a big pro-Biden lib now. Though the James and Catherine donated millions and millions to Biden and the Democrats in 2020. Oh, and now they're for funding journalism. Did you pay attention? Yes, Axios reported James and Catherine Murdoch are nearing a deal to make a multi-million dollar investment to support the formation of a new climate reporting hub at the Associated Press. This new hub will employ roughly 20 journalists and will be backed by multiple donors. It will support the AP's existing climate reporting efforts. AP's already working with several foundations, including the Rockefeller Foundation, the Howard Hughes Medical Institute, and the Walton Family Foundation to fund climate coverage. This is one of those interesting new things. You remember when the left used to be really upset because the media was funded by corporate advertisers? And as we know, in classic Marxist speak, any corporation is only interested in profits and capitalism. So that tilts all the media into this pro-capitalism orbit that's disgusting. Well, now you have these outlets like AP taking money from progressive and socialist charitable efforts from foundations. And then you get this from Axios. The AP says it always maintains editorial independence when working with such partners. AP spokesperson Lauren Easton told the Daily Caller News Foundation, factual coverage of climate change is critical to AP's overall news mission, and expanding that work is something we continue to explore. So what they're basically saying is people like James and Catherine Murdoch don't actually read our stories before they go to print. The donors aren't getting to edit the content. But guess what? The Murdochs know what they're doing here. The other foundations, the other progressive foundations, know what they're doing here. AP's been screeching about the planet dying for at least 30 years now. You can go back to their coverage. You can see this on Twitter. AP reports about how basically the Earth's going to die by the year 2000. So when you give money to the AP for quote-unquote independent climate reporting, these people know what they're getting. They know what they're investing in. Investing in the AP on climate's like giving money to Biden. The Murdochs have increased their investments in media projects in the past few years via their nonprofit Quadrivium Foundation, launched in 2014 to fund groups focused on the advancement of democracy and scientific understanding and climate change and ocean health. Their media funding includes donating to a nonprofit led by quote-unquote conservatives. Well, they don't have quotes. Axios doesn't put quotes around it, but we do. Conservatives called Defending Democracy Together, which publishes The Bulwark, a center-right news site founded in 2018 in opposition to Trumpism. Yes, no, we know what The Bulwark is. It's a nest of Democrats. It's a nest of Biden lovers who pretend to be conservatives, who used to be conservatives like 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. Notice, yes, Axios calls this group conservative. Then, Quadrivium was a founding donor for the 19th, a nonprofit newsroom focused on covering the intersection of gender, politics, and policy. The 19th could also be described as a radical leftist, woke, pro-abort, pro-gay, pro-Black Lives Matter, quote-unquote, news site. But that's called it just a nonprofit newsroom. That's what liberals do. They use conservative for the Bill Kristol and Charlie Sykes people who aren't conservatives, and the actual radical leftists get no label whatsoever. Then there's this thing. I caught this on CNN the other day. It upset my boy Ben when he heard about it. CNN was noticing that Superman was, they were dropping the motto, the American way. They didn't like the American way. They wanted to be truth, justice, and a better tomorrow.
They're all worked up about, first of all, the new Superman, bisexual, now changing the motto from truth, justice, and the American way to truth, justice, and a better tomorrow.
Yes.
That's days of programming on Fox News.
A better tomorrow, yes. Now, the American way part of the phrase came during World War II. That was a logical move when, you know, there was this world war. I think now the message is this is a global franchise. This is a franchise looking to the future. And that kind of ethno-nationalism, you know, perhaps is not the right style going forward. I do think it is partly about appealing to a global box office. But hey, who can argue for against a better tomorrow? What's so bad about a better tomorrow? Sounds kind of vague and simple to me.
Are you against a better tomorrow?
Are you against a better tomorrow?
This is where we were like, what? Brian, what is this ethno-nationalism thing? Let's Google it. What is he trying to say here? Google sends you, I guess, to Wikipedia. The central theme of ethnic nationalists is that nations are defined by a shared heritage, which usually includes a common language, a common faith, and a common ethnic ancestry. Now, does that sound like America? I don't think so. It continues. Those of other ethnicities may be classified as second-class citizens. Oh, now we're getting closer to where the Stelters of the world come. Stelter tried to explain that, you know, oh, the American way, they started using that in World War II. We kind of understand that because that's when Americans were fighting Hitler. But now Trump is Hitler, so we can't really use it anymore. The American way now somehow is a phrase that has to be put through some Trump derangement meat grinder. You can't say the American way. That seems like you're suggesting with your MAGA hat on that the American way is superior to the Mexican way, that it's superior to the Guatemalan way. Oh, and it's superior to the Haitian way. They always have to filter it through their cosmopolitan lens. You know, Stelter mentions that these movies are made for a global audience, so... Oh, so we have a woke corporation now. We got to sell movie tickets in communist China. So don't use the phrase the American way because it upsets the communist Chinese. I just think the whole idea that the American way is ethno-nationalist is backwards. The American way has been the melting pot. I thought Jim Acosta was very upset that the American way was defined by the Emma Lazarus poem at the Statue of Liberty, where for all people yearning to breathe free. But look, that there is such a thing as a melting pot. This is one of those things liberals don't believe in now. The idea that people would immigrate to America and share something with us, a commonality, a common set of values. Oh, they can't have that. They prefer the immigrants to segregate. To me, if you're going to come into America and say, I don't need to learn English, sounds kind of, I don't know, ethno-nationalist? Speaking of CNN, in the newest Reliable Sources newsletter, Oliver Darcy makes a big thing, the usual anti-Fox line. Guess which network didn't carry the 1-6 proceedings? Darcy reports the 1-6 House committee recommended on Tuesday that Steve Bannon be held in contempt for ignoring a subpoena. CNN and MSNBC viewers saw that happen live. But over on Fox, the channel whose top host has mocked the very fact that there was an insurrection on January 6th, coverage was nowhere to be found. When I flipped to the channel during proceedings, I was treated to a commercial break. That break was followed by a segment on critical race theory. Yeah, CNN's always upset when Fox doesn't say and do everything exactly like CNN wants Fox to do. There is something to be said for having a bias in what you choose to cover live. Part of it is a network asks, what will their viewers watch? What will their viewers tune out? So yes, I know that Fox News has discovered if you're going to cover a very stilted Democrat committee, maybe Fox News viewers won't love that. Let's repeat, this committee, the January 6th Select Committee, is extremely selective. It is an all-Trump-hater committee all the time. It is unanimous. It's a pile of Democrats, and then Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. There are no members here who balance the CNN tone of all of this. If there was an actual Democrat versus Republican breakdown here, where there was somebody allowed to make a, dare we say it, pro-Republican point of view, it's probably CNN that would be dropping the live coverage. They do have this habit of having these committee hearings live, and then it's like, and now we turn to the Republican from Texas, and CNN goes right to liberty, 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 right into the advertisements. Hey, let's look at the emu. We don't need to hear what the Republican question is. There are useful questions that might be answered by this special committee. But your coverage doesn't have to be live to be covering the probe. This is one of those things we need to keep an eye on. There's a disparity in live coverage of events. I mean, this has gone on for many, many years. Going back to the coverage of the Watergate hearings, the coverage of the Iran-Contra hearings, when Republicans, again, are in the spotlight. When they think there's an impeachment amiss, then we get lots of live coverage, including on taxpayer-funded NPR and PBS. But when the Democrats are being investigated by the Republicans, well, that's not news. When they had hearings into Whitewater in the Clinton years, if we may go back to the ancient days, that's not news. In 1997, they had the Thompson hearings, were all about the Clinton-Gore campaign, and other Democrats in 1996 were taking money from foreign sources, from the Chinese communists, from the Indonesians, from Buddhist monks. Al Gore attended a fundraiser at a Buddhist temple. These were the stories they did not want to do because the Democrats were the ones being monitored. Instead, what we got was reporters standing outside the hearing room and saying, "This sounds like a waste of taxpayer resources, Peter." They actually suggested that the congressional hearings themselves were a waste of taxpayer money, not to mention a waste of the precious time of network news. This is why we're here, to talk about the disparities, to talk about the bias, and it's often driven by emotion. What they call news judgment is often driven by, "I hate Trump so much." Or it's driven by, "Barack and Michelle are the coolest Americans ever." And those feelings are easily translated into what kind of news coverage you get. We all have our emotions. We certainly have ours when we watch the news. And hopefully we can then apply not just our emotions, but our reason and our numbers and our analysis. And that's why you come to NewsBusters. Come once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.